Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb, we had the pleasure of speaking with Grace D., MD, to discuss the development of CEACAM5-directed antibody-drug conjugates in non-small cell lung cancer. Dr. D. is the Chief of Thoracic Oncology and a Professor of Medicine in the Department of Medicine at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center in Buffalo, New York. In our exclusive interview, Dr. D discussed ongoing research with tucumitamab revtansine and its known safety profile in non-small cell lung cancer, the importance of incorporating specialized tissue collection into daily workflows, and the potential role of competing docetaxel-based combination strategies in the second-line setting. Just starting off, can you provide some background on CEACAM5?
So CEACAM5 is short for carcinoembryonic antigen that is expressed on about 20 to 25% of non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer. In terms of its function, it has been implicated, potentially mediating increased metastatic potential of malignant cells, and also may have some role in mediating the function of immune cells as well.
You know, investigators have known about CEACAM5 for some time. So why is it now that we're starting to see targeted approaches?
Well, it's just going with the wave of therapeutic development. Initially, it had been used as a biomarker for cancer monitoring, for example. But as technology has changed and now there has been focus on how can we optimize target delivery of chemotherapy, for example, and successes of this approach with antibody drug conjugates have been seen in the clinic for, you know, at least a couple of decades now, starting with other malignancies, hematologic malignancies, for example. And, you know, slowly we've tried to do this approach of antibody drug conjugate based therapy in solid tumors, also seeing successes with this approach. CEACAM is just one of those, you know, no-brainer, you know, it's been long characterized. We know much about it. So it makes sense that it's the next tumor-associated antigen to be selected as a target for ADC-based therapeutic development.
One of the agents that's being investigated in this population is tucumitamab revtansine. Tell me a little bit about that agent, kind of how it operates and what population it's being investigated in.
It is an anti-CEACAM5 antibody that's conjugated to DM4, which is a maytansinoid that acts sort of like a vinca alkaloid. So it's like anti-tubulin property that is used for its cytotoxic activity. It's been used and developed in non-small cell lung cancer. Initially, we've heard about, you know, the clinical activity a few years back from small, you know, phase two studies looking at what the clinical efficacy readouts in terms of response rates, for example, PFS, among patients who've had prior standard first-line therapy or even second-line therapy and had no other therapy available. So we've seen some hints of activity even among those what we call, you know, heavily pretreated population. And so currently, given the signal of clinical efficacy, it's currently being explored initially to see if it can potentially replace docetaxel, which is our kind of default second or third line treatment after patients progress through frontline platinum-based chemotherapy and immunotherapy. The field has changed a lot in terms of, you know, what is considered first-line therapy. And so docetaxel has been the sort of default second, third line after progression on platinum and immunotherapy. But docetaxel, with or without ramucirumab, for example, the efficacy can be limited by toxicities as well. And so coming up with, you know, better options is always on the horizon. And so the key question that is being addressed is based on all these different ADCs and One of them is tocilizumab. Will it have a role of replacing docetaxel for selected patient population, namely patients whose tumors have high expression of CEACAM5?
A phase 1b2 trial evaluated RGX-104 added to docetaxel in patients with relapsed refractory non-small cell lung cancer. I know it's early and we don't have head-to-head data, but how do those approaches seem to compare?
So we actually were one of the clinical trial sites involved in developing this kind of oral agent to see if it may have some activity as well in combination with docetaxel for non-small cell lung cancer. But the trial is still early, you know, looking at safety profile. RGX-104 is not expected to be a standalone drug. You know, it's being combined with, at least on that trial, you know, docetaxel or other immunotherapy, for example. There are multiple other study approaches looking to combining docetaxel plus something else. But, you know, if you were to ask medical oncologists, you know, treating lung cancer patients who are generally more frail and older population with, you know, cardiovascular and pulmonary comorbidities, we would tend to lean towards having patients be treated with regimens that are better tolerated. So ADCs in general, at least based on the, you know, several ADCs in development that we've tried and tested, generally speaking, have a much better tolerance profile compared to chemotherapy. Of course, there are differences specific to the payload use, specific to the target tumor antigen. So even pulmonary toxicities, you know, granted that is also on our radar. For example, interstitial lung disease is commonly reported as a potential toxicity of interest. We're still early in the phase of understanding, you know, what are some of the mechanisms of, you know, ILD, which is of prime concern for our lung cancer population. And if you follow the development of ADCs in general, even the toxicity profile can differ with the same drug according to the cancer diagnosis. So lung cancer patients appear to have a higher predilection for developing interstitial lung disease. And when you think about, you know, combining these as they show success in the second, third line setting, we're already seeing the migration of these agents development into, you know, testing it in the frontline setting. So, you know, more to come for us to understand, but the toxicity profile is something that we watch carefully and would influence how we choose treatment. But, you know, going back to your original question about, you know, how it compares with, you know, some other docetaxel based combination trials, you know, a lot of it will depend on mature clinical data showing what will improve patients' quality of life better, control the cancer better, and for longer duration of time. Certainly, if you have a targeted approach wherein you can select patients most likely to respond to treatment, we would, you know, like to personalize treatment that way. So with the ADC-based therapies, for example, with tocilizumab, you know, you're honing in selectively to patients with overexpression of this protein. And, you know, this protein tends not to be expressed in normal cells. So there's that differential potential safety signal. So in general, because of these features, we may favor ADCs.
How feasible is it that if we see positive data from these studies, this marker will be routinely tested for in practice?
It represents both a challenge and opportunity. You know, even to this date, getting, you know, comprehensive mutation profiling is a challenge from multiple perspectives, you know, like tissue adequacy, payer willingness to cover, you know, these next generation multi-gene target panel, and more or less, you know, like practice patterns, you know, what people are used to, like their workflow in terms of ordering these subspecialty, you know, testing. And so what are the challenges with adding this target for test? Maybe the one reassuring factor is that this is an immunohistochemistry-based assay. The uptake of PD-L1 was easy. IHC-based testing is relatively straightforward, doesn't take too much tissue. So the bigger question is if it becomes eventually, you know, approved in the first line setting, and that will take a while, right? We're only in the second line setting. But ultimately, if it gets migrated to the first line setting, then it becomes easier to implement. It would still be tricky in the second line setting because of the issue of tissue adequacy. But I think, you know, having it in mind for physicians to request, I think IHC-based testing is easier to request.
Are there any other investigational approaches in this population that you'd like to highlight, or any ongoing research at Roswell that you'd like to spotlight?
There's a lot of ADC-based therapies beyond CEACAM5. For example, the HER2-based ADC, trastuzumab deruxtecan, which made the splash in the breast cancer world, is also showing promise in lung cancer. And, you know, now, again, this, you know, testing for HER2 expression in tissue should be relatively straightforward. We also have promising activity seen with MET or MET-based ADCs. The field is getting crowded. And so kind of like what we see with immunotherapy, you know, how do we position, you know, which ADC to use? So in general, what we've observed, at least in the initial development in the treatment refractory setting, you know, second, third line, is you can improve the efficacy signal if you enrich for expression of the target. So finding out whether the tumor expresses it, you will be able to, you know, select patients for the appropriate ADC. And this ADC approach is not only for patients without an actionable mutation. Actually, this approach can also be utilized for patients who have, you know, an oncogenic mutation that had progressed on target therapy. We're seeing such approaches being investigated in combination with target therapy earlier in the treatment line setting. For example, with MET-based ADC, trying to see if this will prolong the duration of disease control earlier in the treatment paradigm, because MET, you know, underpins the acquired resistance in about 20 to 30%, depending on the cohort of patients analyzed. Understanding which patients actually develop, you know, acquired resistance through a particular target antigen will be useful to help, you know, pinpoint who will be most appropriate for certain combinations.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Dr. D. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.